This is Building Bridges, your community and labor report, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
Marathon woman racing across the globe for women's sports with Catherine Switzer.
Catherine Switzer will always be best known as the woman who challenged the all-male tradition of the Boston Marathon and became the first woman to officially enter and run the event. Her entry created an uproar and worldwide notoriety when a race official tried to forcibly remove her from the competition. 4 decades later, the incident continues to capture the public imagination and is, in part, the reason Switzer has dedicated her multifaceted career to creating opportunities and equal sports status for women.
That career has included creating programs in 27 countries for over 1 million women that led to the inclusion of the Women's Marathon as an official event in the Olympic Games, changing forever the face of sports, health, and opportunities for women around the world. Now marathon woman racing across the globe for women's sports with Catherine Switzer and Les Helfman, marathon runner and coach.
My father was a Penn relay runner back in the 30s and a marathon runner. And this is really a tribute to him who loved running. And I certainly had run, but I've never had the kind of endurance and maybe discipline to do marathon running. But I absolutely love it. And I have to be honest, I've sent multiple marriage proposals to Hossein Bolt, who has not yet responded to a single one of them. And that's maybe because I haven't put on the right kind of running shoes. But with that, Catherine, it is really with great personal affection as to what you have done for sports and as a marathon runner that I really welcome you to WBAI, and a very good friend who is very involved in coaching and running marathon and has renewed my interest in it in many ways, and that is Les Helfman. And it's great to have both of you.
Thanks for having us.
It's great to be here.
Les, I want to turn it over to you because you said that there's a particular question you want to get Catherine started with to help flesh out the issues of the work, if you will, of running and the experience of Catherine and marathon running.
Well, Catherine, when you came to the Boston Marathon in 1967 as a 19 or 20-year-old journalism student, and what brought you there? How did you get there?
Well, you know, Les, it's a long story and a short story, so I'll give you the real short version here because we could go on all night with this. But basically, when I was about 12, my dad encouraged me to run a mile a day because he saw a little skinny kid who was sort of insecure and wanted to make the field hockey team in her high school. And I ran that mile a day, and I did make the field hockey team, but this mile a day gave me this incredible sense of empowerment and confidence. That was a wonderful thing for a little girl to grow up with, and it helped me bust all the old ancient myths that were around about women's sports, you know, that, you know, they were defeminizing and that you weren't going to be able to have kids and you're going to grow hair on your chest and all that kind of stuff. So by the time I got to Syracuse University, where I was studying journalism, I decided I would go and see if I couldn't work out on the men's cross-country team. And, you know, nobody had done this in 31 years, but I didn't know that. So anyway, I went out there, and the guys were so wonderful. And one of the guys in particular was sort of an assistant coach who was really the university mailman, and he had run 15 Boston Marathons. And by the time I met him at 19, he was really ancient. You know, he was 50. And he felt sorry for me because I was so slow, and started running with me every day and regaling me with these Boston Marathon stories. And one night, you know, during practice, I told him that, you know, I was tired of hearing about the stories. Why don't we just run it? Because it had always been in the back of my mind that even that I could do the really long-distance stuff. And we were up to about 10 miles by this time. And I felt really good going slowly, but I didn't have any speed, but I felt like I could run forever. And he just dismissed it and said that a woman couldn't run the Boston Marathon, that it was physiologically impossible, that women were too weak and too frail, and all the old myths that I had disproved to myself, you know. And I was really upset with him, and we argued, and I said that other women in history had run marathons, including, in fact, at Boston the year before, a woman had jumped out of the bushes and just run the race, and he just didn't believe any of it.
Well, in the Olympics at that time, Catherine, what was the longest distance that women were being permitted to run?
Yeah, the longest distance was only 800 meters, or two laps around the track, and any more than that, it was just deemed physiologically dangerous.
I think they forgot about Athena too, but we won't go back to ancient Greece
The kind of or Atalanta or Diana or anybody.
Absolutely.
But they were my heroines, I mean, I'd read about them, and I thought, well, they could do it. And, I came from pioneering stock and women who went out with the wagon trains and all that kind of stuff. So you were going to give me this weak stuff. And so my coach, to his enormous credit, said if I showed him in practice that I could do the distance, he'd be the first person to take me to Boston. And I did. In fact, we ran 31 miles in this particular workout, and he passed out at the end of the workout and said he was thrilled. He said women have hidden potential in endurance and stamina. And so the rest was all icing on the cake, if you see what I mean, Les, because he came to my dorm with the paperwork, and we signed up for the Boston Marathon, and I paid my $2 and... it's what is it now, Les, $225 or something?
Something like that, right.
And off we went to Boston. So that's what got me there. It was sort of the reward for proving to my coach that I could actually do the distance. And he was incredibly proud of me. And frankly, I was incredibly proud of myself.
Legend has sort of grown up that you dressed up as a man to enter the race. But that's not the way it happened, right?
No, not at all. Well, so, of course, then the day of the race, what happened? Well, a series of coincidences began to unfold. I signed my name K.V. Switzer with my initials, so the entry form went in, and the people at Boston thought it obviously was from a guy. And then the day of the race, despite wearing something very, very cute and sexy, it was snowing and sleeting, and I had to keep on my heavy gray warm-up suit to stay warm. It was really cold. It was snowing and sleeting, and had a headwind as well. So we were all bundled up, and from the distance, I looked like one of the guys. Although, once I was in the starting pen, there wasn't a guy there who thought I was a guy. And then 2 miles, should I go on with the story at this point, Les?
Please.
Should I go on with what happened?
Yes.
Because, the gun went off, and 2 miles down the road, I'm running along with my teammates, and we're having a great time and waving at the press truck that goes by, and the press truck is going crazy, taking pictures. There's a girl in the race. When the press bus that had the journalists and the officials on it, I had the race director on it, and he was getting teased by these guys and lost his temper. They were saying, there's a girl in your race. She's wearing numbers. And he just jumped off this bus, went after me, and attacked me physically, grabbed me, and threw me back and cursed at me and screamed at me just to get out of his race and give me those numbers and try to rip my numbers off.
And what year again? What year was this again?
67, 67, Banned in Boston. Right. Do you remember that, Mimi? Are you old enough to remember Banned
in
Boston?
Yeah, I certainly do.
So, but what happened is my boyfriend, who was a ex-All-American football player and weighed 235 pounds, was running along with me and threw a crossbody block into the official and sent him out of the race instead. In fact, yes, I know, it's hilarious in the retelling. It's in telling this, you see the whole scene. And he flattened this official. And my coach said, run like hell, and down the street we went. Well, the bozo of the race director did this in front of the press truck. The pictures of the incident were flashed around the world and were on the front page of all the newspapers before we even finished the race.
Well, I want to pick up from there, because the question really is, where are women as marathoners at this point? I mean, I've fallen in love with people like Tegla, who ran right by me. I guess it was a couple of marathons, maybe about three marathons, four marathons ago. No,
you no, less 98, is, I think.
Was it 98? Was it that long ago? But
yeah.
Just spectacular. And some of the Ethiopian and Kenyan women runners, and of course, such a diverse group. But really, where are women? Have they come into their own, not because of their physiology or anything, but because they are allowed now to have the prominence and the egalitarian status that they should have with male runners?
Absolutely. Who can ever believe that this has all happened in my lifetime? And I take a great deal of pride in pushing it forward and getting the women's marathon in the Olympic Games. But once that happened in 1984, it was like a virtual explosion because people saw that on television and they saw how well these women were running. And everybody knows that a marathon is a far distance. So it really resonated. But the to me, I'm glad you mentioned Tegla and the Ethiopians because they're my heroines too, Mimi, because these women have come from nothing, from second, third class social status, from a culture that gives them no encouragement whatsoever, to suddenly realizing that running can get them to the top. They have probably some natural attributes that maybe even we don't have in North America. They have an incredible work ethic, and they're wonderful people. And they're taking the prize money and the status they have and going back to their country, and they become heroines. They really have. They're not only bringing money into their villages and inoculating kids and sanitizing water, but they are changing the social status of women by being role models. And it's been phenomenal in Kenya, and in Ethiopia is exploding now. Ethiopia, in a way, more interesting because they've come out of a very strict communist culture, communist society, and the guys came out first naturally, and then now they're seeing that this huge potential in the women, and they're fabulous. They're absolutely fabulous. You know, in Japan, here's another one, where women have traditionally been second-class citizens, even though it's a very, very industrialized country. And these women, you know, really had no heroines for all their culture until the women started winning the gold medals in the Olympic Games. And now these women are like rock stars when they go back home. They can't even walk down the streets of Tokyo and Osaka without getting mobbed. It's amazing. Yeah, Les, wouldn't you agree that probably the biggest star in women's running right now is a woman, Paula Radcliffe?
Absolutely. But she's had the opportunities that were created largely by a lot of the work that you did. After that Boston Marathon incident, you finished the race, and you turned that experience into the tool for opening up doors for women in running, not just in this country, but in the world. At what point did you realize that this was something that you could leverage into these kinds of results?
I wasn't sure that I even knew what the word leverage was, but I'll tell you, it was a negative incident that really inspired me. And I often, you know, my dad said I'm the kid that would always walk in the room with there's a pile of manure, and I would say there's a pony someplace, you know? And it's true. I took that negative and said, okay, listen, There's got to be a reason why women aren't running, and it came down to the lack of opportunity. And I said, well, I'll just try to create those opportunities. And it's amazing. It became a life work for me. But the biggest leverage point I had, Les, was thank God I was a journalism student. I knew how to write, and I wrote a lot of proposals to get sponsorship because I felt that if we had major sponsorship for women's running, we would get the world attention, particularly media attention. And I did. I took it to Avon Cosmetics, the world's largest cosmetics company, and they loved my ideas and hired me. And we began doing a series of races first in the U.S., and then within 2 years we were in several countries. And because it was a big multinational company, we eventually had races in 27 countries and fulfilled the International Olympic Committee requirement for international participation.
What did you see in those countries where you travel and set up these races in terms of the opportunities for women's running?
Particularly
compared to what's out there now.
Well, particularly compared to what's out there now is like kind of hair-raising because, I mean, these people had never even organized a road race before, much less had a women's sports event, okay? Many of these countries had never had any kind of activity for women. And in Japan, for instance, they just couldn't believe it. You know, you can't do this. It's not appropriate. The same old myth stuff, you know? And so we went ahead and organized it. And under the guise of a cosmetics company, we kind of I would say flew over the radar, if you see what I mean, because it made it glamorous and attractive for women, and so relieved them of a little bit of their nervousness. Oh, but let me just give you a few examples. Japan, the women wouldn't take off their sweatpants because they were ashamed of having short, like maybe ugly legs. in Brazil, the head of the federation, said he wouldn't let his wife or daughter come to our race and that it wasn't going to be successful and maybe 100 women would show up. And, of course, 10,000 women showed up. And in that country was also amazing because some of the women in the race were so poor they didn't own shoes. And, you know, I'm not talking about Nikes or Reeboks here. I'm talking about the fact that they were so poor they didn't have shoes. And so here's a race that suddenly gave them a T-shirt and a medal and told them they were somebody. And many of those women got educations and started businesses. In Malaysia, where a third of the population is Muslim, it's 106 degrees out there and very high humidity. And the women came out in droves, covered from head to toe, you know, and they still ran. And it was just amazing to see the, you know, them with arms, legs, and heads covered, you know, just astonishing. And they're having the time of their lives. It was absolutely great. There's never been an experience that was negative. Everybody is joyful and very positive and having a great time.
I just want to ask you another, since, you know, one of the things that occurred to me as you were just speaking, Catherine, is the whole issue of something that has been irksome to me, and that is really the loss of amateur sports, that the inaccessibility by virtue of the professionalization of sports and the commercialization and the money that enters into it. I can see 50 kids who are just phenomenal at the Prospect Park in Brooklyn ice skating rink, but of course there's no way they can afford to immerse themselves in the sport and become prominent in it, assuming they want to. But have we really lost with all of the prominence? Is that one of the downsides, that we've kind of lost amateur sports, which is such a fantastic, fantastic experience and one of the things that should be accessible to us, i.e. the, 35,000 people running in the New York Marathon?
Yes, but is that a loss of amateurism? You know, there 35,000 people, well, 43,000 actually ran in the New York City Marathon, if you can manage, can imagine. It was the largest marathon in the world. And by the way, they had something like, Les, was it 96% finishing rate?
I didn't see the numbers, but that's usually around what it is.
Yeah. But here's the point, Mimi, is that there are a dozen people in that race. 12 people, let's say, out of 43,000 who have any hope of winning prize money. And so the rest of them are there because they are amateurs, and it just for the joyful experience of running and doing, beating their personal best. I personally have embraced the prize money issue for women because for so long they had been left out of prize money, whether it was tennis or skiing or running, and because it gives them a way to earn a living. And I've seen that money changed their lives in a big way, and whether it's Russia, Japan, or Africa. And that's still, to me, that the greatest joy on top of that, of course, the greatest joy is seeing the hundreds of thousands of women who are just going out on the street every day and running for the sheer joy of it and the sheer sense of movement. I think we could do better, coming back to your point, I think we could do better with the kids in giving them kind of an amateur structure that rewards them and gives them prizes. And I know, for instance, the New York Roadrunners, in terms of running, have an incredibly wonderful charity that's called Team for Kids that gets the kids out running and gives them coaching and advice and fun and gives them that sense of empowerment to either go on and do well in school or to go better in running or just enjoy themselves.
Coach Les, you've got to say something about your own involvement in this wonderful sport.
I've been involved as a coach for Team in Training, which is a program of the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. One of the interesting things to me about that is that about 75% of our participants are women. What do you make of that?
Who, me?
Yes, Catherine. the fact that so many of our runners overwhelmingly are women doing this for charity causes, ours and there are other worthy ones out there as well.
Yeah, well, it's not just that they're running for charity. I mean, that's the number one thing. Often that helps draw them in, but I think the reason they stick with it is because it is a very, very empowering activity. And actually, it's a little different for women than it is for men, because I've interviewed a lot of guys, And I say, listen, for women, running is a transformational experience. It makes them feel great about themselves, makes them feel confident. You know, they love their bodies. They love the endorphin high. They feel they can do anything. And I say to men, do you feel that way? And they say, well, I feel great about it, but I don't feel it's transformed me. I'd rather compete. I'd rather go fast. So I think sometimes it is different. But for women, it's also accessible less. And that's what you're doing. You're making running and making something impossible, like a marathon, very accessible for them. And they are highly motivated by the altruism. That really makes a big difference to them. What do you think, Les?
I think you're right. You're 100% right. We see people who are coming through our programs. Some do it one time, and they've had a great experience with it. But lots of them keep up with running, whether they do another marathon or not. They continue running, and it's really a very rewarding thing to see that. Do you see the same kind of things in other countries? I mean, you're just back from Kenya a few months ago. You ran in the Safaricom. Do you see the same kind of results there, the same kind of responses by women?
No, not yet. They're enthusiastic. Young girls are aspiring to run, and they are revered now for running. It's okay to run to school and move up. But
that's a big change, though, right?
Yeah, that's a big change. The hard thing, though, Les, for them is that there is an astonishing amount of talent in the country. And the kids who are able to get a visa and get out of the country to earn money, because there's no prize money to be won in Kenya, very little anyway. Very few races there are prize money races. They're all in Europe or North America. It's very complicated and very hard to be noticed, and so they're struggling to be really good. They're really, really working hard to be very, very good. The Safaricom Marathon that Les just mentioned was really an interesting experience for me. It was run on a game reserve, and it was the primary purpose of it was to... It closed the game reserve for one day only a year, and it raised money not only for the preservation of several species. They have already saved the white rhino and the Gervie zebra with this race, with the money they've raised. It is a charity race from that point of view. It's a fundraising event. Therefore, there is a lot of sponsorship and corporate teams and things like that there. But one of the other things it does is it doesn't just, like, save the species. It helps educate and re-educate the villagers that live near this game reserve because, poaching is still a big problem with wildlife. And if somebody's starving, it's going to be very hard to convince them not to poach. So you've got to give them some other way of earning a living. And so this Safaricom Marathon actually uses the majority of its funds to teach people trades, guiding, and conservation, and being able to plan for the long term rather than the immediate. So that's very, very, very interesting. But, boy, there's a lot of work to be done, I must say.
And if you want to think a lot more about this and have an absolutely delightful evening or weekend, you really should pick up Marathon Woman, Running the Race to Revolutionize Women's Sports by Catherine Switzer. It is a memoir. It is terrific. It's got some of just on the front covers that wonderful little experience, maybe not so wonderful, but then memorable experience from the 1967 Boston Marathon. And Billie Jean King is right when she says, when I think of running, I think of Catherine Switzer. And I thank you. And again, people should read Marathon Women. And Les, tell us how people who might want to start running or train with a coach such as yourself, and I can't think of anybody better to begin with, how can they get in touch with you?
We can. You can get in touch with Team in Training at www.teamintraining.org. You can travel to a marathon, half marathon location. We also do century bike rides, triathlon coaching. We cover everything. You do a little bit of fundraising, and get a great experience and also do some work towards curing really devastating diseases.
Catherine, thank you for being so gracious, and most importantly, thank you for indeed revolutionizing women's sports and helping to get marathon running for women in the Olympics and all that you do. And I've got my father's medal in hand. He would be proud and he would love this interview as I have. Les Helfman, Catherine Switzer, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our new website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.
buildingbridgesradio.org.